Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're putting on a different kind of thinking cap, you could say. We're taking a look at the Muse headband. You might have seen it, that sort of sleek device marketed for, well, meditation and sleep.
Right, the wellness gadget.
Exactly. But we're not just looking at the consumer side today. We're actually digging into its surprisingly growing role as a tool in actual scientific research.
Yeah, that's the fascinating part.
So our mission today is basically to understand why this, you know, relatively accessible piece of tech is starting to gain traction in the scientific community.
It really is. The Muse headband, it's fairly affordable, pretty user-friendly for a wearable EEG device. Mm-hmm. And researchers are definitely noticing.
EEG, so electroencephalogram, brainwaves.
That's the one. And what's interesting is this broader trend, you know, this growing interest in using these consumer-type EEG systems for real research.
Because they're just easier to get a hold of.
Pretty much. Wider availability, lower cost barriers.
Yeah.
It opens up possibilities.
Okay, let's back up a bit for anyone not familiar. The Muse is essentially a headband, right? With sensors.
Yeah, sensors that pick up your brain's electrical activity, your EEG.
And usually that kind of tech was stuck in specialized labs. Very expensive equipment.
Oh, absolutely. Big, complex setups.
So how is Muse, and maybe devices like it, changing how research might be done?
Well, number one is cost and ease of use.
Yeah.
Like you said, the research-grade systems. They can be tricky to set up, tricky to run, and really expensive.
Right.
So devices like Muse offer a much more accessible way in, just to start collecting neurophysiological data.
Which means maybe more people can do this kind of research, or bigger studies.
Potentially, yeah. Broader questions, maybe larger groups of people involved, things that were just harder before.
Okay, but here's the big question, I guess, for the scientists. Can you actually trust the data from these consumer gadgets for serious research?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
How does it stack up? Yeah. Accuracy, consistency,
yeah,
compared to the proper lab stuff?
Yeah, and that's a really crucial point, and it's one the scientific community has been, well, actively looking into.
Yeah.
There's actually a growing amount of work on exactly that. Feasibility validation.
Yeah.
Can we use Muse in research?
Yeah.
We saw a scoping review, for instance.
A review, what did it cover?
It basically mapped out peer-reviewed articles that used consumer-grade EEG devices going back to about 2010. And it definitely shows more and more studies are using them, Muse included.
Okay, so people are using them. But what about that trustworthiness question? What did the validation studies find?
Well, some key ones have done direct comparisons. Muse versus research-grade systems.
Head-to-head.
Pretty much. So there was one study on BioArc. It looks specifically at Muse for EEG spectral analysis, you know, the different frequency bands, and also frontal alpha asymmetry.
Panning it down.
They actually found a significant correlation for the mean power spectral density. That's across all the main frequency bands, delta, theta, alpha, beta, gamma.
So the basic brainwave signals.
Yeah, when comparing the Muse using a mastoid reference point to a high-end biosimi system using the same reference.
That sounds pretty good.
It's quite promising. It suggests that, you know, for many types of analysis looking at those broad frequency bands,
yeah,
Muse data holds up quite well.
Which means researchers could maybe use it for bigger studies that were too expensive before.
That's the implication. Leverage the affordability and accessibility.
So the fundamental brainwave frequencies seem to align pretty well.
Exactly. And that study also found a significant correlation for alpha asymmetry.
Alpha asymmetry. Remind me.
It's linked to cognitive stuff, emotional processing, basically the difference in alpha wave activity between the left and right frontal bits of the brain.
Okay.
And when they calculated it using the standard method, the Muse results correlated well with the research system.
So, yeah, it suggests Muse can give meaningful data on these key EEG markers.
Okay, that's encouraging. But we also saw another study, right, looking at the MUS2, the newer one, and cognitive workload, something about smartphone use. Yes, that one. That study used what's called an NBAC task. It's designed to push your cognitive load up and down.
Okay.
And they measured EEG data, like alpha and beta event-related desynchronization, ERD.
Mm.
Basically, changes in brain waves related to the task.
And how reliable was the Muse 2 there?
Well, they found it could output the signals, definitely.
Yeah.
But the reliability for, like, tracking changes consecutively during that user experience testing, it was a bit mixed.
Mixed? Why?
The researchers thought it might be down to challenges with the baseline. Getting a really stable baseline EEG reading during an ongoing dynamic task like that can be tricky.
I see. So maybe for very fine-grained moment-to-moment changes in certain settings, it's more challenging.
That seems to be the takeaway from that particular study. But again, the other validation works suggest that for those broader brainwave measures, it's still a potentially valuable tool. And we see that in how it's being used.
Okay, so it sounds like the reliability might depend a bit on exactly what you're trying to measure and how you're doing it.
Makes
sense. All right, so we know it's feasible. It's shown some decent validation. Where are people actually using the Muse in research now? What kind of studies?
Well, there are quite a few interesting areas popping up. One study we saw looked at pre-sleep alpha brain entrainment.
Entrainment, like guiding the brain waves.
Yeah, using audio or visual stimulation to try and nudge the brain towards alpha waves, which are associated with relaxation. This study was for chronic pain and sleep problems.
Did they use Muse for that one?
Not specifically in that study, no.
Oh.
But it introduces the concept using brainwave frequencies therapeutically. And that's an area where Muse could potentially play a role in future research, you know, monitoring if these entrainment techniques are working.
Right, because it can track those alpha waves. So using external cues to aim for that relaxed alpha state before sleep.
Exactly. Then a really big area is brain-computer interfaces, BCI.
Ah, controlling things with your mind.
Sort of.
Yeah.
And consumer-grade EEG like Muse is showing up a lot there. The scoping review has really highlighted BCI as a major application area.
Why? Because it's easier for more labs to experiment.
Probably. Accessibility is key. One specific example mentioned in the PLOS 1 review, I think it cited Garcia et al., was using Muse for decoding visual stimuli.
How does that work?
Based on something called steady state visual evoked potentials, or SSVEPs.
SSVEPs. That rings a bell. Is that when you look at a flickering light and your brainwaves sync up?
That's the basic idea, yes. Your brain responds predictably to that flicker frequency. And researchers showed Muse could pick up those SSVEP signals.
And use them as a command.
Potentially, yeah. Translate that brain response into an action on a computer.
Huh. What about, like, imagining moving your arm? Motor imagery.
That's another big BCI area. Our sources didn't highlight Muse as much specifically for motor imagery, but consumer EEG in general is definitely being used for that kind of control research. Again, accessibility helps more people try it out.
That's really cool, democratizing BCI research a bit. Okay, what about clinical uses? Is this tech moving into healthcare settings at all?
Well, that PLOS 1 review did mention clinical experiments using consumer EEG, and Muse was included.
Like what kind of experiments?
One really striking study was by Wilkinson and colleagues. They showed that Muse could actually help identify patients with large vessel occlusions.
Whoa, isn't that a major predictor for acute stroke?
Exactly. So the potential for a more accessible, maybe faster screening tool there is, well, it's significant.
Yeah, no kidding. A portable, affordable device that could help spot serious conditions earlier, that's huge potential.
It really is. And another group, Ishak et al., used Muse differently to look at stroke patients after treatment.
How so?
They used it to characterize neuronal function and track clinical recovery, kind of monitoring how the brain was healing.
So maybe a way to track progress outside of a specialized hospital setting?
That's the idea. More feasible, more accessible monitoring of recovery.
Okay, so stroke detection and recovery. What about mental well-being? Muse is heavily marketed for mindfulness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is science looking into that connection?
Yes, there's definitely research emerging there, too. We saw a pilot study, for example. It looked at mindfulness practice with Muse in elementary school kids.
Kids? Interesting. What did they do?
They used the EEG feedback from the Muse device during mindfulness sessions.
So the kids could sort of see their brain activity.
In a simplified way, yeah. And they found improvements in reaction time on something called the Stroop task afterwards.
The Stroop task? That measures attention and focus, right? Resisting distraction.
Exactly. Inhibitory control. And some related studies in adults have also shown changes in electrophysiological markers, brainwave patterns, linked to better attention regulation when using Muse for mindfulness training.
So the idea is the real-time feedback might actually help people get better at the mindfulness practice itself.
That seems to be the thinking.
Yeah.
Making those brain states associated with mindfulness a bit more tangible, maybe accelerating the learning curve, improving focus.
And the Muse just makes it easier to study this in more people, more settings.
That's a big part of it, yes. Accessibility is key for getting these interventions out there and studying them effectively.
Okay. And stress, that's another huge area. People are always looking for tech solutions for stress.
Right. And there's a systematic review that specifically looked at stress monitoring using low-cost EEG devices.
Did it mention Muse?
It did, yeah. though it noted that another device, the emotive EPOC, was actually used more often in the specific datasets they reviewed.
Okay.
But Muse is definitely relevant in this low-cost category. And the review highlighted correlations between certain brainwave frequencies, beta, gamma, and alpha, which Muse can measure and reported stress levels.
So the building blocks are there. Muse measures the relevant frequencies, and those frequencies seem linked to stress.
Exactly. It suggests that these accessible devices hold promise for stress monitoring research, maybe in daily life contexts, not just the lab.
Okay, it really sounds like there's quite a bit of potential here for Muse to contribute across different scientific fields, mainly because it's just easier to get and use.
Definitely seems that way.
But we need that balanced view. What are the downsides? The limitations researchers absolutely have to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's super important to be realistic. These are consumer devices, not medical-grade equipment. That means trade-offs.
Like fewer sensors?
Typically, yes.
Yeah.
Fewer sensors compared to lab systems, and potentially lower signal quality or more noise.
Mm-hmm.
The scoping reviews mention this, and that reliability study hinted at it too.
So they might not capture the full detailed picture of brain activity.
Right. They might miss some nuances. Researchers have to be really aware of that when they design their studies and, crucially, when they interpret the results.
So you can't just swap a Muse in for a high-end system and expect identical data. You need to be extra careful.
Absolutely. Really careful methodology. Rigorous artifact management that's cleaning up the noise in the signal.
Artifacts like muscle movements,
yep.
Blinking,
yeah.
Electrical interference.
All that stuff, yeah. Things that aren't actual brain activity but can contaminate the EEG signal. You need solid methods to filter that out. And thorough validation is key.
Okay. So exciting possibilities with Muse, expanding access to brain data, but it's not a magic bullet. It needs careful handling.
Precisely. It complements traditional tools. It doesn't necessarily replace them in all situations.
Makes sense. So looking ahead then, where is the scientific use of devices like Muse going? What's next?
Well, there are some really interesting trends. Muse itself, the company, has talked about using machine learning with their EEG data.
AI on brainwaves.
Kind of. The idea is to use machine learning algorithms to potentially improve the reliability of the data or maybe pull out more subtle insights from it.
With all the data being collected, using AI to make better sense of it, that seems logical.
It does, especially with large data sets. Machine learning could potentially find patterns that are hard to spot otherwise, enhance the value for research.
Interesting. Any other future directions?
We saw an RCIF paper.
Mm-hmm.
Still early days, mind you. But it discussed integrating large language models, like the tech behind ChatGPT, with BCIs.
LLMs and BCIs.
For things like predictive communication. Helping people communicate, perhaps, by predicting intended words or phrases based on brain activity.
Wow, that sounds futuristic.
It is, but it hints at where things could go. And the kind of data collected by accessible devices like Muse might eventually feed into developing those kinds of applications.
So Muse would be part of the ecosystem providing data for these advanced interfaces.
Potentially, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It points towards new ways people might interact with tech, maybe even communicate.
And there was that Cambridge study about tuning into individual brain rhythms to learn faster.
Yes. That wasn't Muse-specific, but super interesting conceptually.
The idea that maybe we could optimize our brain state for learning.
Right. If we can understand our individual brainwave patterns better, maybe even nudge them slightly, could it boost learning or cognitive performance? It's a compelling question.
And could accessible devices like Muse eventually help with that? Personalized learning based on real-time brain data.
It's definitely a possibility down the line. If we can easily access info about our brainwaves, maybe tailor learning approaches, Muse's accessibility could be crucial for making that kind of research more widespread, exploring if it actually works.
Okay, so let's try and wrap this up. It seems pretty clear the Muse headband, which started out as, you know, a consumer wellness product, is genuinely carving out a niche for itself as a useful, accessible tool in science.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Its affordability, its ease of use. It's letting researchers ask different kinds of questions, maybe bigger questions in areas like sleep, BCI, even clinical stuff like stroke assessment, mindfulness, stress.
It's definitely enabling research across a pretty broad spectrum, and we're seeing that adoption grow.
But always with the caveat about understanding the limitations and the need for rigorous validation.
Absolutely. That's crucial. But that accessibility factor really is a game changer for its scientific relevance. It just opens doors for more researchers and different kinds of studies.
This has been really illuminating. It's fascinating seeing a consumer device cross over and become increasingly relevant in the research world, possibly, like you said, democratizing access to brain data a bit.
Mm-hmm. It's an exciting space to watch.
And it definitely leaves you thinking, as this kind of consumer-grade EEG tech, like Muse, keeps getting better and more integrated into research, what new frontiers about our own minds might suddenly become reachable for a much wider range of scientists? Something to ponder. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.